You're listening to High Control, a podcast about identifying, leaving, and recovering from high control, high demand groups, also known as cults. We're not experts, but we do know what it's like to be a part of and then leave a cult. Your high control journey starts now.
Welcome to the High Control Podcast. My name is Scott Lloyd, along with my friend Allie Henney. This is a podcast designed to talk about our experiences with high control religion and cults. And Allie, I'm glad to see you once again today. And today we're going to be talking about picking up the pieces on the other side of our cult experiences. And I know that a lot of people who are coming out of high control religion or groups or cult-like groups experience a loss of community, a loss of identity on the other side of high control religion. And so, Allie, I think it'd be good today if we kind of unpacked for our audience some of the things that we experienced on the other side of our cult experiences. So when you were coming out of the cults, out of the high control religion that you experienced, what were some of the feelings? What were some of the emotions that you were going through, at least initially?
Yeah, there were a lot of different feelings. And so whenever my church left the UPC, those feelings were more so like leaning toward relief, relief and release and kind of like, oh, good, great. I can just kind of be a normal Christian again. And I don't have to have like this thing. I don't have to have this thing hanging over my head of the different doctrines and whatnot of the UPC. Like I can just kind of exist within Christianity and not kind of feel weird about the space that I occupy in that. You know, there were some relationships and stuff that were lost or maybe kind of, you know, damaged or kind of made a little bit tense by that. But because I didn't have like some of the deep roots or whatever within the UPC. And so like a lot of, you know, my friendships and a lot of my connection or whatever was just kind of within my church. And so whenever that changed, it didn't really change a lot of those friendships for the most part. Whenever I left the furnace, there was sort of, because I left, and I said this in a previous episode, I left like generally on, you know, what people would say like, oh yeah, I left on good terms. Like, you know, I had gotten a job, at a church, back in Missouri. And so whenever I left, I was able to kind of leave and I was able to kind of leave on a happy note. You know, I had, you know, even while I was there, had been having like difficult conversations with some of the leaders, just about kind of some of the practices, some of the ways that we were engaging as a community, and then had some of those conversations, with people years later. But whenever I left that, there was more of like a detox that I had to do, I think, from just some of the ways that we approached faith, some of the ways that I realized like some things just kind of in my own mindsets that had been warped by my participation in that group. And so that was difficult in some ways. But because I was, you know, had another church community that I was part of, it made some of that a little bit easier. Whenever I left the wall, that one was a little bit more difficult because a lot of my involvement with the wall was kind of on the friendship level with just some of the people who were there, some of the leaders. And so we were in one another's lives in, you know, kind of some significant ways, you know, attending weddings, attending, you know, like some of the leader of the wall, and his wife, whenever my husband and I would go out of town, they would come and house sit for us. Another one of our mutual friends in the group would come over and, you know, would hang out. Would, you know, we were adults, but like, you know, we would have like a sleepover, basically, and like, you know, and we would hang out. And she was one of my closest friends. And so whenever all of that fell out, it obviously made those relationships very, very difficult, and it kind of ended them in a way. And again, you know, there was kind of like a relief feeling to that, because it was kind of like, oh, you know, the leader kind of thinks that he's somebody from the Bible, and that's kind of like, you know, thinks that he's like, you know, one of the two witnesses in the book of Revelation. And so that's like kind of one of those things that's just like, you know, I guess if you're going to have like a Christian, like, you know, relationship deal breaker, right, the person, somebody thinking that they are someone from the Bible, like that's a deal breaker. Mm-hmm. And so that was difficult. And so there was kind of, you know, grieving that, what I thought the relationship was, what I thought the friendship was, grieving that it actually wasn't that.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned this idea of grieving, and those of us that are familiar with the stages of grief, you know, there's all of those, that progression through denial and anger, and then actual lament about the relationships and the community. And for me, on the other side of the United Pentecostal Church, it was really difficult for me to come to terms with what I consider to be a loss of identity, because for most of my life, I was either preparing to be a preacher, a minister in the United Pentecostal Church, or I was serving mm-hmm. in some capacity, whether it was a Bible study teacher, a youth leader, an assistant pastor, and later on, a pastor of a non-denominational group that had recently left the UPC. So much of my identity was tied up in who I was and what I did in my capacity as a preacher and as a minister. And I didn't realize, you know, how much I would grieve that loss of identity. And it took me a while to find my feet, sort of in a new profession, as a professor, as a teacher, as someone who was coming alongside those that were leaving high control religion and my online activism and things of that nature. It took me a while to sort of be comfortable in my own skin again. And I think everyone, to whatever degree you were involved in a former high control group or religion or cult, I think everyone coming out of that sort of deals with this cognitive dissonance about, where do I fit in? Who am I supposed to be? How am I supposed to serve? And I don't know if you experienced this, but for me, there was even difficulty in, I wanted to hang on to my faith in Jesus, because I worship him. I love him. I have a great deal of respect and admiration for who I believe Jesus is. But I had difficulty finding a community where I could fit in, and I even went through times of doubt and unbelief and a spectrum of disbelief about, am I going to continue in this faith of Christianity, or how am I going to figure this out? And to be honest, there are days that I still struggle with that. Did you experience any of that or all of that?
So I didn't really experience the aspect of my faith, like, coming into question. And I think that a lot of that has to do with that I had faith outside of these groups. So I had faith. So my faith wasn't formed in the UPC. It wasn't formed with the wall. It wasn't formed, you know, with my connection with the Furnace and with IHOP and all that type of stuff. Like, it wasn't formed there. And so it was easy for me to retain my faith after leaving those things. But as far as like the sense of identity, you know, for sure, I really struggled with, okay, who am I, particularly after I left my church that left the UPC. So I was a staff member at my church. And so that was through the leaving of the UPC and all that type of stuff. But then that church was a spiritually abusive environment. Like the leader of the church, for all the good that he did in trying to lead the church out of this very kind of just difficult place of being in the UPC, there were a lot of aspects of his leadership, a lot of his own personal trauma, a lot of other things that affected how he comported himself as a leader. And so that environment still, for me, still remained spiritually abusive. And so I ended up leaving that space. And in leaving that space, because I had been a staff member, you know, I kind of was on my way, if you will, kind of in leadership and in rising and in influence and all these other types of things. And so then whenever I left that and moved to Virginia and ended up at the Furnace, there was like a loss. So, you know, I'm showing up in this place of this ministry. These people don't know me from a can of paint. And, you know, where I was a person that was respected, that was valued within my previous community, it was like none of that really existed for me in after leaving it. And so there wasn't really anything, you know, other than the personal skills and the growth and stuff that I had experienced, like the skills and stuff that you can take with you. But in terms of influence, in terms of those types of things, there's things that you just can't, right, you know, translate over. You cannot easily translate from one context to another context. And so that was difficult. And then with the wall, there was, there wasn't really like any, the loss primarily was friendship. That was the main kind of struggle there, was like, oh, these were people that I counted among my friends. And even like one particular friendship, like ended. It pretty much like, you know, it was difficult. Thankfully, I will say that I have reconnected with this person. This person has since, disconnected from the wall, from kind of what was left of the wall. She has since disconnected from that. And so, we have reconnected. We actually, you know, just reconnected probably 6 months ago. And that was really, positive for me, because, you know, she, of course, you know, the relationship, isn't the same, but it was really good to be able to have that reconnection. And, for us, I think that she realized kind of what she had been through, and because, you know, she really, my experience with them, was completely different than her experience with him. And her experience was definitely one where she was being actively manipulated, actively abused, actively taken advantage of. I don't know if she would necessarily name her experience in that way, but just from what I saw with my own eyes, like naming what I saw with my own eyes and heard with my own ears and observed with my own senses, I feel like that she definitely was mistreated and misguided in a lot of ways. And so and I know that she is healing from that. And so you know, for me in that situation, the healing more was, again, you know, from the loss of friendship, And I'll say, you know, even an aspect in later years, there's maybe been kind of a sense of a loss of identity or whatever, or kind of question, or even maybe I won't even say loss of identity. That the better way to say it is even kind of a questioning, because there have been things, because, you know, one of the big things with the wall was, you know, personal prophecy. Right. And it was, you know, speaking things, believing that the Holy Spirit was speaking things to us about other people that would kind of, you know, encourage them and build them up in their faith and their calling. And so there have been things that people said, you know, prophecies or whatever, personal prophecy, personal words, I guess I think words are probably, prophetic words are probably the better word, better phrase to use than prophecies. But you know, prophetic words that I received from those people, that I, you know, see like, oh, this, like, it seems like that those things have come to pass. Like, it seems like that those things have happened. And so it's kind of, I don't know what to make of that. I don't know what to think about that. Yeah. And also, you know, like I'll say, you know, with the furnace, there definitely was that sense of, again, you know, I was kind of on my way in that, within that system, and then leaving it again, kind of like that sense, that loss of identity, and kind of like, you know, who am I? Where am I? Where am I going? What am I doing? And so I had to kind of, you know, be able to find and name for myself, myself once again.
Yeah. And you say a lot of good things there about this idea that on the other side of high control religion, on the other side of, cults, there is this process that I think all of us go through, and some of the experiences are similar. Many of them are different when you look at our specifics of our own individuality and the friendships and the relationships and the beliefs that we embraced. And I know for me, on the other side of the United Pentecostal Church, there was a lot of work as far as looking back and figuring out what was something that I could embrace, something that I could keep, something that I could celebrate and express gratitude for, and then something that I needed to reject out of hand. And I think as all of us reflect on our own experiences in these high control religions, I think it's good to simultaneously celebrate and express gratitude for the gifts that were given us. For instance, in my experience with United Pentecostal Church, I know that I gained a great deal of appreciation for worship that was based in emotion, because a lot of Christian groups totally reject that out of hand. And but I saw a lot of emotive, demonstrative types of worship that I believe was genuine in the United mm-hmm. Pentecostal Church, people celebrating and expressing their love for Christ in a very emotional way. And I still have a great deal of appreciation for mm-hmm. how people celebrated in song, how people celebrated with emotion. And then also another gift that I received was the ability to read in a comprehensive manner. I've talked about my first experiences with my grandmother's Bible, even before I could read, tracing the letters and learning a great deal about context and how to interpret poetic language from the King James Version of the Bible. And there was a great deal of the Bible that I committed to memory that was taught to me in the United Pentecostal Church. And so looking back on that, I know that set me up later in life for success when it comes to reading and reading comprehension, and also an appreciation for the arts, an appreciation for emotive and creative ways of expressing oneself, even though I am not exactly what you would classify as an artist or an artistic person. I still have a great deal of appreciation for that based upon the gifts that I received in the United Pentecostal Church. But then also the other side of that is learning how to go through the process of grief and lament and to look at my circumstances and to look at my situation and to say, you know, There was a lot. There was a high cost that I paid as an individual for remaining in that ministerial organization as long as I did. And I think that's a healthy way to approach life in general, but certainly to approach the traumatic experiences that all of us have to one extent or another, and especially through the lens of looking at our experiences with high control religion, that you have to differentiate between the seasons of gratitude and the seasons of lament. And you can do both of them simultaneously and move forward in that process of grief.
Yeah, you know, I think that you're so right that it is a process. Mm-hmm. And I think that and this was something that I think was particularly true within kind of like the ex-UPC community, because that is something that exists. And it was something that even with my church, that we recognized we didn't want to be ex-UPC, like, because that's a whole vibe, that's a whole flavor, that's a whole whatever. And it often, I think maybe the community has moved on a little bit, but for the most part, like, the identity is sort of found in what you're not. And so I think that finding your identity in not being something, rather than being something, that's always a difficult space, because then you're constantly having to push against something. You're constantly having to push against that thing. But that thing is an organism, and that organism is growing and changing. And yes, you know, there's the saying that as much as things change, they also stay the same. And so there are kind of some, you know, basic things that aren't going to change, right, about difficult, about corrupt systems, about difficult systems, about abusive systems. Like, there are some things that aren't going to change, because if they did change, then it would no longer, those systems would no longer exist, or they would no longer exist in the same way. And so I think that, you know, the ex-UPC identity that a lot of people espouse, and there's kind of, and there can even kind of be some weirdness, and weirdness is probably the wrong word to use, but I'm going to go with it, where it's kind of like you get people who wanted to basically keep everything,
yeah,
except for the holiness standards,
right,
and so they wanted to just, you know, still be UBC UPC in everything, mm-hmm, but just not have the standards. And so you have like that flavor of ex-UPC, and then you sort of had the flavor of ex-UPC that, you know, didn't want to really have anything to do with anything that was UPC at all. And so even, but still, like, I don't even know how to say it, because this is where I think that my church even kind of fell for a little bit, where it was like, yeah, you know, we don't want to be that, and we don't want to be weird, but then we also don't know what to do with these things that were part of our identity. And we don't know what to do with, you know, the emotive worship. We don't know what to do with speaking in tongues. We have no idea what to do with these things that have so characterized us. And there was a point when, and this was also one of the reasons why I ended up leaving the church, was because it had gotten like really toxic and even though we were trying to not be ex-UPC, like, we were still operating in that vein, I think, some, and still were being influenced by some of those folks.
Right.
And so it was like, So we're gonna, you know, put down people's worship. Like, we're gonna put down like the things that people are doing to express their love for Jesus. And there was something about that for me just felt really gross, mm-hmm, and I didn't want to participate in that.
Yeah.
Because I came from a tradition, I come from the Black church tradition, where people emote, where,
right,
people, you know, where people dance, where people clap, where, mm-hmm, and that is like across denominations. I mean, yes, you do have some Black churches where that is not the experience, where everyone is very buttoned down and everyone is very, nope, we're not gonna hoop, we're not gonna this, we're not gonna that, we're not gonna whatever. Like, you do have that exists within the Black church because it's not a monolith, but the vast amount of Black church expression is one where people emote. It is one where people, where, like I said, where people clap, where people dance, where people bring their emotions to worship. And so then, for this, you know, predominantly white church to then leave this organization that was appropriating my culture to begin with, but that's a whole other different story. Yeah. But for then it to then be denigrated,
right?
And I'm sitting here like I come from this. Mm-hmm. Like, I come, like whether I was Pentecostal or not, like whenever I was Baptist, like this is where I come from. Mm-hmm. And you're putting it down.
Right.
And that feels really gross. But then, like, also you're not really, like, you know, doing any better than the people who are oppressing you.
Yeah.
Because you're sitting here and, like, you know, if brother so-and-so is feeling moved by the worship and is feeling moved by the song, and he decides to cut and run around the church, like I understand there are functional, like, safety whatever concerns for not doing this, but this person has done this at this church for the past, you know, 25 years.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you're going to be like, well, no, you can't do it, well, no, you can't do this. Like, there was kind of a, and I hope that this doesn't sound like, you know, janky, like girl, are you, like, you know, condoning the cult behavior? I'm not condoning the cult behavior. What I'm saying, and what gets me to my point is that as someone who is leaving an abusive, corrupt system, you have to be able to differentiate between what was the cult,
mm-hmm.
what was the thing, what was the cult, and what is just, like, your normal, what is a normal part of living and moving and having your being as a person. And we're not going to discern that perfectly. And unfortunately, because the reason why cults work is that cults often will wrap up their doctrines, their ideas, their abuse in those just pretty basic things to humans and to, you know, who we are, whatever languaging we put on it, whatever purposes we place on it ourselves. There are some things that are very intrinsic to the human experience. And whether we call it Jesus, whether we call it the universe, whether we call it Christianity or whatever, there are some things that folks just do. And there are some things that some folks just experience.
Sure.
And so then whenever you're leaving, because you have your experiences wrapped up in the cult and in those ideas, it can be very easy to just want to toss everything and to say every single thing that this cult stood for is now wrong and bad and evil and this and that. And yes, especially these destructive groups, yes, we can probably say, you know, a solid 85%, but probably 90%, probably 95%, if not 98 or 99% of the stuff that these groups stand for is trash, and it needs to go, and we need to let go of it. But the thing that I want to remind people of is that if you joined, especially, or if you were somebody who grew up and you remained, you didn't leave as soon as you were able to get out of it, there was something that kept you there. There was something that drew you into it. That big idea, mm-hmm. that good idea drew you into the context. And so that doesn't mean that everything that the group said or did was right and good and how you should conduct your life. But there was some light in there. There was something in there that appealed to you. And that general basic big idea, that good idea that appealed to you, and some of the things that were kind of around it that helped to pull you in and solidify your place in it, not all of those things are bad,
right,
or wrong or harmful. And your leaders, your group, your whatever, they played and preyed upon those good things. And that's something that sucks. And that's something to be mad about. You know, like, I'm thinking about, like, with my friends and stuff with IHOP, you know, a lot of people, because IHOP was really big on, again, like that personal prophecy, mm-hmm. you know, that, or prophecy even just in general. And there's some things that are kind of wrapped up into the same ball where they're really kind of even different categories of stuff. And, you know, I know people who struggle with you know, there are things that have happened that I cannot explain, that things that were meaningful to me, or things that I see connection to, but I don't know, I don't have a category for it, because IHOP would call it this, IHOP would say that it was that, and I no longer have categories for that. I no longer have categories for what to call it, because the group put a category on it, and now I don't know how to move on from that. And so anyway, so there are several different things that I was saying, but basically what I'm saying is that I think that whenever we leave, there can be a temptation to just throw out everything that we received in that space, and that's part of the process, and I'm not putting that down.
Sure.
That's part of the process. Sometimes you have to completely reject everything, and then you kind of have to go through and you have to sift and you have to sort and you have to figure out, like, is there anything that I can keep from that? And so, you know, we talk about process, we talk about all of that. In that process, you know, don't be afraid. I would encourage people not to be afraid to hold on to some things, and you might and there might be things that, you know, you held on to at first that you're like, you know, 5 years down the line, you're like, you know, that doesn't serve me anymore. Actually, I kind of think that's still toxic.
Yeah.
I need to say goodbye to that. But to not shy away from that process. Cause I think that everybody people leave and they want to, and they leave and you want to take down the group, or you leave and you want to hate everything about it, or you leave and you want to and there's kind of another extreme that people go to, that I want to challenge people that there's even an element of that is still cult programming. Mm-hmm. And you're just going from one extreme to another extreme, and that isn't always healthy or helpful.
I think you've beautifully articulated something that I certainly experienced when I was attempting to lead a congregation that was formerly in the United Pentecostal Church. And on our on the other side of the break, I'll share some specifics of what I'm talking about. But I think generally what we are talking about in this process of picking up the pieces on the other side of a cult experience is an awkwardness that every one of us experiences when we go through a transformative period. So if you think about human adolescence, or if you think about a quarter life crisis around 25, 27 years of age, where you're attempting to figure out exactly how you're moving. And certainly for those of us who have experienced midlife crisis, all of those periods in our lives are awkward. They're weird. In some aspects, they don't make a whole lot of sense, and we feel like we're unconnected and unmoored to what we held to previously. And I think we experience the same things when we go through exiting a high control group. So I'll share some specifics from my experience when I was attempting to lead an ex-United Pentecostal church. On the other side of this break, you're listening to the High Control Podcast. I'm Scott Lloyd, along with Allie Henney, and we'll return in just a moment. Welcome back to the High Control Podcast. My name is Scott Lloyd, along with my friend Allie Henney. And today we're talking about picking up the pieces on the other side of high control religion and what that looks like. And Allie, prior to our break, you were talking about this awkwardness or this weirdness that all of us experience as we're attempting to make sense of our experience in the cult or in the high control religious group. And how there are some aspects that we embrace and some aspects that we need to reject. And sometimes it's difficult to discern what we should reject and what we should receive. And I think there's that process, right, that all of us go through where we examine our previous beliefs, our previous practices within the context of high control religion. And you sort of go through this process of what can I receive? What about it was good? What about it should I show gratitude for? What is it that I need to reject because it was harmful or traumatic or still produces anxiety in my life? And what is it that I need, for lack of a better word, to redeem, to take it and remake it and refashion it and rebrand it so that I can take the good from it and move forward with my life? So that process of receiving, rejecting, and redeeming is very important. And what you were articulating in a general fashion and with some of your specific experiences, I experienced as well when I was attempting to lead a church that was formerly a part of the United Pentecostal Church. And when I became pastor of that church, they had already left the United Pentecostal Church, and there was a remnant of the congregation who were much like you described, right? They were sort of rejecting the holiness standards, the dress codes, the behavioral modes of belief, but they were hanging on to a lot of the specifics of the doctrine. And the way that I described it to people in attempting to lead this mixed congregation, because there were people that still firmly held to the doctrines of the United Pentecostal Church, which were steeped mainly in a oneness understanding of the Godhead. And we've talked about how the UPC rejects the Trinity in a previous episode. And so for them, it was a very, very important doctrine, especially as it pertained to baptism. So they believe that in order to be saved, one had to be baptized by immersion in the name of Jesus for the remission of sins, for it to count, for it to matter. And it was necessary for salvation. Of course, coming into this church, I didn't believe that. I rejected what theologically is referred to as baptismal regeneration, the idea that it's a necessity to be baptized in order to be saved. And that was just a further expression of it. But I knew that we were attracting a lot of new people, and it would have been harmful to the folks that still held to that to sort of beat them over the head with what I understood. And so what I tried to do was to lead them gradually in a new direction. And instead of hammering them on the oneness of God, I talked about grace and what the Bible taught us about grace, and how Ephesians 2:8 is very specific that we're saved by grace. For by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves; it's the gift of God. But when it came to actually baptizing people, that's where I faced the conundrum. And so what I decided to do was sort of split the difference. So I would actually get up before I baptize someone, and I would say the titles in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. But then I would also give some allusion where I would say in the name of Jesus as well. So I was trying to do both. And of course, what happened, right? I upset everybody instead of making everybody happy. But that was the way that I chose to do it gradually. And of course, famously, it didn't work out well for me in the end. So I think that is sort of illustrative of on a grand scale where you're trying to lead a group of people, what we all go through as individuals, right? So there was this gradual process where there were parts of my previous doctrinal understandings, biblical understandings that I would attempt to hang on to. And then as I learned more, as I read more, I would reject more. And it was a continual evolution. And it's difficult to do that in a group setting, but it's also difficult to do that personally. And that's where the awkwardness and the weirdness that you were alluding to comes from.
Yeah. You know, I think that it's very hard to split the difference. That was something for me in my ex/post-UPC experience, that it was just that became difficult for me. Like I said, you know, in the last segment, because there were things that were part of my faith that I was like, like it seems kind of silly that we're trying to, you know, legislate that. Like it created, honestly, like you can create, if you're not careful, whenever you leave a group, and especially like if you're somebody that's a leader, or, you know, there's a group of you that decide to leave and you still want to try to, you know, have some sort of expression of that, whatever, it can be very easy to replicate the dysfunction of the group in leaving the group. This yes. is something that I've seen in various, like, you know, post like prayer movement communities and stuff that I've been part of, where there are certain things that is, how do I say this? Like in your normal individual life, you might not necessarily, after, you know, years of kind of, you know, detoxing and deprogramming and being separate from it, in your normal life, you're not necessarily in cult programming, but then things happen and you maybe end up with, you know, around the same, you know, group of people again, and you can end right back up in cult programming just by, you know, the collective effervescence of everyone around you. Hey, we all have the same shared background, whatever. It can be very easy to kind of slip back in to some of those cult like behaviors, or in my case, where we left the cult, where my church left the cult. And then it was like, you know, we're trying to forge a way forward as a community. And so we're just going to go to different extremes, or, you know, we're going to not, we're out of the cult, but the cult isn't out of us. So, mm-hmm. So, you know, instead of the pastor, like learning how to pastor in a different way, it's like, okay, I'm still going to act like a UPC pastor, and you can't do, like, if you're not going to be in the UPC, you can't like act like a UPC pastor. Like you have to find, like you literally have to figure out new ways of going about your life in doing that. And so one of the problems that I faced, and again, you know, aside the spiritual abuse was like the reason why we left. And so tied in with the spiritual abuse were some of the continued mindsets, or even some of, and what mindsets weren't continued, was some of like the extreme railing against the way that things were, that then were still harmful, these ways were still violent, these things were still just not good for my soul. And you know, and it took, and honestly, like with the history of that church, you know, that church like bottomed out for a while. It bottomed out for many years, and they were able to get some new people in, were able to get some new energy. Like, you know, to look at the church today, you wouldn't be like, oh, you know, they're like ex-UPC or anything like that. But the thing that's interesting, the thing that's very interesting, though, is that the church actually joined another organization that I won't name, but that is generally a respected organization. But because I know some of the tea, I know that this organization originated out of another group of people who were leaving another kind of Pentecostal and charismatic movement, that they right. felt that there were some things that were extreme, that were toxic, that were whatever about the stream of the movement that they were leaving. And so they created another movement. And so they created another movement that is also toxic. And so it's like, you know, you're trying, and you know, if I were to call out the name of the organization, a lot of, you know, people would know, a lot of people who are inculcated into kind of Christianity, you would know the organization that I'm calling out. Or if I started naming churches, you would be like, oh, that's part of that, or that's whatever, but I'm not going to do that here. But it was something that I thought was really interesting, is that it's like, okay, you know, y'all left this group y'all left the UPC. Then y'all became part of another group that, you know, on paper is really good. I mean, you know, they're responsible as a church planning, church growth organization. There's a lot that's really, really good about it. But because I know like the origins of this organization, I'm also like, and I can see, because I know the origins of the organization, I can see where, there are some aspects of this identity, of this, you know, Pentecostal and charismatic identity, that you all kind of approached from the extreme. And so it's like, you know, you want, like in this particular instance, it's like, okay, you know, like, yeah, you know, y'all want to the your worship and everything to feel emotive and to feel intimate and to feel all these other different types of things. So you want that, you want to keep that, but then you don't, like you say, like, you know, but you don't want all the weirdness, and that's like all well, and that's all fine, well and good. But it kind of, at least in my experience with this organization and with how my former church interacted with this organization, it's like, this is really, it seems like that, because there were a lot of ex-UPC churches that joined this organization, in fact, that it's like, you know, that the way that people are understanding this organization's culture and this organization, the way that things are done there, it's approaching your faith and approaching things from that position of what we're not, and what mm-hmm. we're not going to be, or from who we're not going to be. And that's just really awkward. I'm trying to be careful about how I say some of this, but it's just, what I've found, what I've seen, what I've observed, and it's not true for everybody, but it's true enough to be able to say that I've seen the toxic leadership practices still remain within. Mm-hmm. So it's like y'all left one thing, and y'all, because y'all didn't like one aspect of it, but you never thought about, you know, how your leadership, how the racism, how the toxic whiteness, how the patriarchy, mm-hmm. how all these other different things, like you're leaving a group that you think is extreme, and then you're creating another group, but you're not going through the process of really examining everything and really running everything through a filter. And I understand, again, you know, for a time you might hold to some things that you don't hold to 5 years later, but you're not, but I think it's incumbent on those of us who leave these toxic spaces that we don't go and then replicate the things that we left, or replicate certain aspects of the thing that we left. And I've seen that again, also, you know, in the ex IHOP and the ex prayer movement community, or in the prayer movement survivor community. And it's something that's very difficult, because it's like, you know, there's been times where it's like, okay, you know, I can see the cult programming here. Like, you know, certain people jump in and they come in and they make pronouncements and they speak, and just because of who they are, all of a sudden everybody's like, okay, you know, we gotta fall in line. And it's like, no, actually we need to be asking questions, and there, you know, there's an incident, you know, recently where I myself was like, you know what? I just kind of fell into programming here because certain people were saying, oh, this is a fact, or this certain thing that we knew was going to happen, that it was just sort of inevitable. And I never thought like, oh, I can actually push back against that, because I mean, even if it is inevitable, it doesn't make it right. And mm-hmm. it doesn't, just because something is inevitable doesn't mean that we should just, you know, sit back and just be like, okay, this thing that can be harmful, that even if it is inevitable, is also harmful, and we should maybe say something about that, and we should maybe, you know, not just accept that it's inevitable, we should maybe, you know, try to stop it even if we can't. And yeah, so I just think that it is so critical for us not to jump, you know, not to jump from one extreme to the other, and to constantly be paring through, be parsing through what it is that who it is that we want to be and how it is that we wish to show up in the world, and to be examining if the way that we're showing up in the world is actually doing harm to other people, and to try to mitigate that. But even in terms of our own like personal beliefs or our own personal ethos and that sort of thing, I think that it's very important for us. As we're leaving high control groups, again, to resist that, because the thing with cults is they want to have, they have an answer for everything. Right. They're answering your questions. It's like, you know, they have the cure. If there's a disease, they have a cure. If there's an issue, they have a cure. If there's whatever, they have a cure for it. And, being able to live in the place of uncertainty, because cults want to, I mean, that's cults play on our desire for certainty, that regardless, and that's not just like religion, that's anything, our desire, right, for certainty, our desire for a system, our desire for a way to solve a problem or to not feel pain or to whatever the situation is. And so it can be very easy then to jump in and be like, and to take that same thinking, even if we don't believe all the things, even if we don't ascribe to all the things, it'd be very easy to take some of that thinking with us out of the cult. And so like that, like I would keep banging that drum, like, you know, do what feels right to you, what you are able to do in this moment, how you're able to live and understand in this moment. And also be asking yourself, am I going to an extreme? And, you know, mm-hmm. and I also want to, you know, be careful, because I also don't want for it to sound like, well, if you're leaving and you hate everything about your cult, because I know that some people who left, you leave and you hate the world. You hate everything about like, you know, I hate these people. I hate this thing. I hate the thing or whatever. And that is a necessary and needed step to get yourself out to not just go back. Because if you're right, like, you know, I am, you know, years past, you know, I'm you know, 15 years out from being part of the UPC, about 10 years out from being part of the prayer movement. So it's very easy for me to sit here, you know, 10, 15 years later and be like, yeah, like, you know, you don't have to be extreme about it. But like, I know that whenever you're getting out, if you really are trying to leave, you've got to take a hard stance on that thing. Otherwise they'll pull you right back in. If you're like, oh, well, it ain't so bad. You know, it ain't like, you know, having to wear a skirt all the time and it ain't so bad, or, you know, having to like, whatever. And if you're just like, oh, well, it's not like whatever, then you're going to get pulled. Like, you're going to get sucked right back into it. So that extremity, that extremeness is a necessary protective measure in order to protect us from getting sucked back into the cult. But there is a point when I think that the people who are post high control group, the people who are the healthiest, recognize that they don't have to jump from one extreme to the other. And they recognize, like, yes, if the person that you were following was an abuser, if they did horrible, gross, horrific things to people, and that is bad, and the things that they taught led them to that, or the things that they, the systems or whatever it is that they introduced to you led to that, I'm not saying that you have to say anything about that was good, because, you know, there might not be anything about it that was good. But there might be harder to find the good. Right. And you know, that's cool. I'm not saying you have to find the good, but I think that it's important that after a while, if you are still in that place in your recovery, if you're still in the same place that you were the day that you left, or, you know, 2 weeks or 3 months or 6 months after you left, if you are still in that same spot and you still have that same, you're still railing, you're raging against the machine, as it were. If you still are in that place years later, decade later, whatever, and again, there are things that I am still mad about. That we talked about, because Scott and I have talked about them off this podcast, off the microphone. There are things that happened to me that I am still mad about. And yeah, and I'm gonna be mad about it for a long time. I'm gonna be mad about it for a very long time because it wasn't right. I'm not saying that you can't have that, but also 5 years after some of these things happened with some of these people, I feel differently about it than I did 5 years ago. My heart feels differently about it than it did 5 years ago. I'm still mad. I still hate that it happened. I still hate that I was mistreated by a person that I was really, you know, trying to trust, and somebody who said that they had changed and said that they had whatever, and, you know, straight up, spoiler alert, they didn't, and that hurts. And it hurts on multiple other levels that I won't unpack here. But I've also, and I hope that, you know, that the people who did wrong, I hope that they see consequences for the things that they did wrong. Yet at the same time, I'm not in the same place with it. Like, I'm not, you know, following everything that they say and do on Facebook. I'm not, you know, like, pulling things out and being like, look, and this is why. Like, I'm in a different place with it.
Yeah. And, you know, something that helped me tremendously throughout this process was I had to come to terms with, at some point, because when all of us leave these high control groups, as you said, there's a lot of hatred, there's a lot of anger, justifiably so. But then on the other side of that, I had to come to terms with in what ways was I complicit in perpetuating this kind of behavior? Especially as a leader within the United Pentecostal Church, even on a low level of leadership, in what ways was I complicit? In what ways did I benefit? And in what ways was I still benefiting from the toxic traits that I picked up and carried with me as I progressed out of the United Pentecostal Church? Because there's a lot of us, you know, that rightly so look at the cult or look at the high control group and point to the problems that are extrinsic of us. But then at some point, you have to do some hard self-reflection, and I had to do this in my own life. In what ways was I still carrying a lot of these toxic traits with me as I moved forward in my progression? In what ways had the cult-like behavior and the high control behavior become intrinsic to who I was and how I saw the world and the leadership lens in which I functioned? And to a large extent, there's lots of aspects of that I'm still unpacking. You know, speaking from the situation where you were talking about a lot of groups coming out of the United Pentecostal Church or other groups and saying, well, this was what was wrong, but we've got what is right, and never looking inwardly and saying, but in what ways did we contribute to the problem? So I think in the remaining moments that we have left, Allie, it may be helpful for our listeners if we have any advice, if we have any experiences that perhaps we could share that would resonate with our listeners in helping them pick up the pieces. So if you had advice for people that find themselves immediately in their circumstance, leaving a high control group or a cult, what can they expect, and what advice would you give them moving forward?
So as far as what you can expect, I would say expect a lot of different emotions. Expect to feel a lot of different things. If you look up the stages of grief, there's like some people say there's five, some people name seven, but grief comes in stages. And those stages, it's not one of those things that is linear. Like, okay, I went through anger, and now I'm going through denial, and now I'm going through bargaining, and now, like, it's not a linear process. Often you're going to cycle through multiple stages of grief at various different times. And there might even be like one dominant thing that you experience. There might be one dominant emotion or one dominant stage that you return to in your grief. But you're gonna go through that process, and it's gonna be a cycle. It's gonna be waves. It's gonna be nonlinear. There's gonna be days that you're gonna be really, really happy. that you're out of it. You're going to be really, really happy that you're done with it. You're going to be really happy. You're going to be like, you know, goodbye and good riddance. And there's going to be days when you're going to be really, really down, and you're going to lament that, you know, you're going to lament the friendships that you lost. You're going to lament the things that you don't have anymore, the leadership or the influence or the security or the family or whatever it is. There's going to be an up and down aspect to that. As far as advice goes, I would say to stick with it and to stick with being out, and to not be hard on yourself, especially, you know, in the first year or two. There's going to be different things that you're going to have to go through. Like, you know, you're going to go through you're going to have a lot of firsts. So you're going to have, you know, your first holiday, your first birthday, your first if there was some sort of, you know, special kind of time or time of year or day or whatever within your group, and you maybe have people that you're connected to are still in the group, or even just like the broad awareness that it's going on, you're going to feel feelings related to that. For me with UPC, for years, seeing youth convention, that was one of my favorite events to go to, seeing youth convention and youth camp. It would make me both angry and sad. I would be very angry, and I would also be very sad about it. Sometimes there would be, you know, Schadenfreude. I'd kind of be like, oh, like, look at that, look at them, whatever. But that took, you know, several years of going through that cycle, to where now, you know, I might see things posted about it, and, you know, I might have, like, because I have maybe a few people that I'm still connected to on social media who are still in it, and there might be kind of things that, you know, like, I might just morbid curiosity take a look at, but it doesn't affect me. And so it's going to take time to get to, because you're going to have all the firsts, and then after, you know, you get through all the firsts and all those firsts, it might take like a year or two to get through all of those firsts. But then there's going to get to be a point when you're going to realize, like, there's going to be a stage in it where you're going to realize, like, okay, hey, I've been out of it for a while, and people don't necessarily even recognize me as a member of this group, or there's not much that you can tell about me that would ever indicate that I used to be a member of this group or of this movement. And then as you get farther out from it, as you get farther out from leaving, those waves tend to be a lot less. They tend to be smaller waves that you're kind of buoying on, but they can happen. The last thing that I'll say here, something to be prepared for, something that I was not prepared for, and so I want to prepare you all for it just on the off chance that it happens, is you can experience what I am affectionately terming Michael Corleone syndrome, where just it's like, you know, Godfather 3, like, you know, Godfather, he says, you know, just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in. And so I have not been pulled back into any of my former cults, just FYI, I want to say that. But with the International House of Prayer, with the IHOP scandal that I've referenced in probably every single episode, there is an aspect of that that has pulled me back into the prayer movement in a way that I did not expect, and not even really sure that I wanted, but I'm here. I have a voice. I've been speaking up about the abuses that have been happening there and have happened in the broader prayer movement. And that was something that I didn't expect. And as we enter an age, or as we're in an age of exposure, where whenever people do things wrong, we now have social media, we have like all these tools that people who have survived abuse can have to be able to say, hey, I survived this and somebody should do something about it. Or, hey, I survived this and I don't want anybody else to have to deal with this. So I'm going to shout it from the rooftops that this place is bad or that these people are bad or whatever the situation is. And so we have those tools. And because we have those tools, a lot of corruption and evil is being exposed in a lot of groups. Like, none of us probably would have known about Nexium if it hadn't have been for either A, that article in the New York Times that we saw, but most of us probably saw it and was like, oh, wow, that's weird, and kept it trucking. But for you know, stuff like documentaries like The Vow, that it has become like something that, and maybe it's just because for me, because I'm a person that's like into cult stuff, that I'm like, oh yeah, this is like a seminal thing. But it's something that even in the IHOP KC crisis that we've been able, that from the beginning, people were like, y'all need to watch The Vow. You need to, I recommended that to so many ex-IHOPers who had no idea. I'm like, you need to watch The Vow. Mike Bickle is Keith Raniere. Like, you need to watch this. This is how this is going down. Anyway, so I think that because of our increased culture of exposure, there is a good chance that unless, you know, it's like a small little, like, you know, like a house church or some very, very small group, which even then, like, even very small groups aren't safe, because somebody can go and expose them and there could be a whole, you know, documentary and stuff about that. Like, I think about, like, you know, the Mother God, if you've seen the Mother God documentary on HBO, you know, that was a group of like maybe 20 people. You know, they were on YouTube, they had, you know, different stuff, but the group itself was, you know, maybe on a good day 20 people. Yeah, they have a whole entire HBO documentary about this, just like horrible stuff that went down within that group. So even smaller groups aren't safe. And so be prepared for the day that your group might experience exposure. And whenever it does, you don't have to be an activist. You don't have to stand out. You don't have to advocate. You don't have to do anything, but it is going to pull you back whenever that happens. Yeah. And it will likely happen. It will pull you back in, and it will take you through some of these cycles. And just depending on the work that you've done since you've left, you have to be prepared for that it might take you all the way back, and you might have to start working through stuff over and over, all over again.
I think that's some great advice. And if I could provide some advice, I would say, in addition to everything that Ali has said, take care of yourself as well. If you have resources and the ability to do so, seek out a mental health professional, a therapist. And there's a lot of free resources out there as well. I know every time that I've moved about the country in the last few years, one of my first priorities is to find access to therapy. And for me, it's simply talk therapy, and there are other forms that can be helpful as well. But for me, just having someone to vent to talk to, and to kind of share my experience with, and get a professional opinion of what I've experienced and what I've gone through. Also, find a support group, whether that's mm-hmm. online or in person. If there are people who have shared experiences as yours, join that group on Facebook or another social media platform, and get in touch with them and share your experience and listen to them. And there are lots of people out there, especially today, that are sharing their story. And when you feel comfortable in whatever format it may take, even if it's just writing down your story for your own benefit,
yes,
take some time to sort of reflect on your experiences and what you've gone through. And several times throughout today's episode, we've mentioned the stages of grief. And I want to share a resource. Jennifer Brewer has written a couple of books, and she is someone who has left the United Pentecostal Church. And her last name is spelled B-R-E-W-E-R, Jennifer Brewer. And you can find her book. Her latest one is Backsliding into Jesus. And in that book, she goes through the stages of grief after leaving the United Pentecostal Church, how that manifested in her own experience, in her own life, And perhaps by reading some of these stories, and there's lots of them out there, you can find solace for what you're experiencing as well. And hopefully, the High Control Podcast has been a resource for you as well. And as always, if you enjoy our podcast, if you enjoy what you're hearing, if you're benefiting from it, be sure and share it with a friend, like the podcast, follow the podcast, and shoot us a message and give us a rating. And we appreciate all of your feedback. And folks can send us a message by email. And what's that address again, Allie?
Highcontrolpodcast@gmail.com.
Well, thank you very much for that. And again, we look forward to hearing from you. And Allie, I'll give you the last word as we head out the door today.
Yeah, well, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to tell people about it. I can't remember if Scott mentioned it or not. I know you mentioned the email, but also you can follow us on social media. And so do that. Thank you for listening to us. This has been a grand experiment. This is our second to last episode of this season. It's been a ride. I've really been enjoying it. I hope that you all have been enjoying it, and you will have to see, because I'm hoping that we'll have a season two, but a lot of that depends on you. Let us know that you enjoyed this.
Absolutely. And we appreciate you listening and sharing this content with a friend. So until next time, I'm Scott Lloyd for Allie Henney. You stay in control and stay away from the high control folks that want to manipulate and control your life. And remember, you were created with agency, with independence, and you indeed have that ability. So until next time, take care, everyone.
You've been listening to High Control. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to our show. You can catch us on social media at High Control Pod. Check the show notes for resources and how to get in touch. Stay in control, friends.